Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Latest on Deshaun Watson, tip in the money in the tip jar. In about 5 minutes, Ian Rappaport, who last week on the Pat McAfee show said that nothing is imminent, maybe changing his tone a little bit, maybe not. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line first. Lorenzo, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Good afternoon, guys. Good afternoon. Hey, the other day I was thumbing through Twitter, and that's where I get all my news from. And apparently there's this lady named Vanessa or whatever.
Probably Richardson.
And it she is. Said that if Houston and the Braves should make it to the World Series, the MLB should honor the international players by playing some type of anthem. Okay, now I did the research on this anthem. I went and looked at it. It's by some band, Punk-C and the Outlaws or something like that. And I just, you know, I haven't heard enough about it, man. You know, this America is where we live, and if the anthem that we use is not good enough for the international players, then they need to move on somewhere to a place that appreciates them. Okay, and I'm just going to hang up and listen to you guys. I just want you guys' opinion on that. All right, take care. America.
Appreciate the call, Lorenzo. Thank you for joining the Killer Bees. Yeah, I saw Vanessa Richardson's tweet about
too.
This. Now, I don't even know where to go.
That was misinterpreted. Let's just put it that way. And so, you know what? You just take it with a grain of salt, and everybody's got their opinion, and you move on. The point that she was trying to make was there's an international flavor of pretty good proportions on both sides, on both rosters. She didn't mean anything by it, and we'll just move on.
Yeah, I'm
that's not what she meant.
That's not what Vanessa meant?
No. It's a song that has rap groups.
It's a rap
from Houston
song, right?
Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
But the reason I'm saying that, Dell, is because people want to take it to a very
there were
offended
people on
level.
Twitter.
There was a I lot of that. People on Twitter that went to the offended level and tried to look at it from that perspective, which is not what she was trying to do.
It's a great song with UGK and Outkast in it. That's what she's grabbing at, and people freaking out because they freak out over stuff.
Yeah, Dell, thanks for keeping us in line.
Oh, but I'm saying that's
why we love you.
That's the reason why she was going to that. Because the fact that there's an international flavor on both teams.
Was she making a joke? Yeah.
That is not the reason.
But that's why the joke is appropriate. Okay, never mind.
Let's America.
Yeah. Integrate. Yeah.
The joke is appropriate because it's Houston versus Atlanta.
But the people that are responding on Twitter, I think, is like the story. Like the people that are fooled, the people that don't know, the people that are getting outraged over it. It's pretty funny. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Art, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. I think that caller that just hung up, I think he was just playing. I'm hoping
he was. Yep.
Yeah, especially with Lorenzo and that accent he had. But for me, going back to the refs, just following the rule, I don't agree with that because we all know when we had the replay rule, they decided they weren't going to follow that rule. And now every time there's a rule that's kind of gray line, they always go with the conservative way, and it's kind of taken away from the game, right?
That one's not gray, though. Especially, I mean, the rule that you were talking about, Kyler Murray getting hit in the helmet, that's not a gray, vague rule. If you make contact to the head of a quarterback in the pocket, it's a personal foul.
Did you not cringe a little bit after the second one? They thought another one was coming? They got him right after that. I thought.
Go ahead, Art. Sorry to cut you off.
The Heineke play, you know, I had the Green Bay defense on my fantasy, so I was happy, but it was just, come on, like, he could have walked in. I think he tripped, but he dove head first, and it was no one touched him. It should have been a touchdown.
No, it shouldn't have.
But
Art, here's the thing. That's why, like, to Jeremy's point, right, it's the way the rule is written as it relates to the quarterback, and that's why, to Jeremy's point, don't get mad at the officials. Be mad at the league because they need to change that rule. It's for the protection of the quarterback, but it's not just when he slides butt first with legs out. It's giving himself up as an interpretation is the minute the knee hits in that kind of play, and that's why it's not on the officials. They got it right. Even when they brought in the game last night, it might have been Blandino that was on the call, but he basically said, yeah, that it's on the rule itself. It's not on the official. They made the call they had to make.
Appreciate the call, Art. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I didn't see the play. I saw a little bit of the Twitter dialogue saying that I don't even remember what the Twitter dialogue said, but he dove for the end zone.
So he's essentially going from left to right, and there's two defensive backs coming at him, but he still has enough room to get in the end zone. So to avoid the hit coming, he just basically gets low, and he's going to put the ball over the goal line. But his knee hits before the ball gets over the goal line. So they called it.
So it wasn't a dive?
It was kind of like just a fall forward.
I could see that. I could see that being a given up. I mean, if it's a dive, it shouldn't be that he's giving himself up.
It was definitely a fall
forward.
Like
kind of crumbling his body.
Kind of like he just kind of, just kind of got down low and he was going to fall forward and just tap it over the goal line. And no one was touching him. And he thought, well, then as long as I'm not baseball sliding, that should be legit.
See, that one is vague. That one's a little vague, but I could see why that was called like that.
Well, and on the flip side, people get mad because when a quarterback starts his slide, until he's touched, everybody thinks that's where the ball goes. And they're not, and they always go, well, why are they putting it like 3-4 yards back behind where he got touched? Well, because as that rule's written, the minute he starts to slide, the first body, the hip or the butt cheek or whatever, as soon as it goes down, the minute it hits the ground, right at that point is where the ball's placed.
Yep. Yep. So I can see why that was called that way on the field, certainly. 713-780-3776. All right. Deshaun Watson. When is he going to get traded? Where is he getting traded to? Will he get traded at all? It's been something we've been talking about ever since John McClain, Mark Berman, Aaron Wilson broke the news last week about the Texans trying to trade Deshaun Watson before the trade deadline. A trade was imminent. And it looks like leaking that news has at least gotten more people interested. Ian Rappaport's telling Pat McAfee last week on his show that nothing was imminent. He was on Good Morning Quarterback earlier today and said that, you know, it looks like talks are heating up. Here's the latest from Ian Rappaport.
Here's what's going on the Deshaun Watson situation. You have multiple teams, not just the Miami Dolphins, multiple teams are in talks with the Houston Texans on potentially trading for Deshaun Watson. That does not mean as of right now, this very second, that a trade is imminent, just that there is, in fact, interest. Carolina Panthers believed to be one of those teams, and there are some others. So that is where the trade talks stand. Nothing has been done, but the interest is there. Meanwhile, Deshaun Watson's legal situation is still, as of right now, unresolved. Teams are still interested in trading for Watson, even if that does not get resolved. So that is another thing to keep an eye on. Plus, Watson is in shape. He is ready to go football-wise, and there has been no indication, Tom, that the NFL will place him on the commissioner's exempt list. So if the Texans do trade him rather than have him sit on the inactive list for the rest of the season, he would be eligible to play right away.
So that was Ian Rappaport. I think he might have trouble understanding what imminent means. Like, does he think imminent means like in the next 10 minutes? Or, like, I consider imminent next Tuesday's NFL trade deadline, don't you? Like, I think that's what imminent means in terms of trading Deshaun Watson. This, at least that's my feel. Am I wrong? 713-780-3776. Regardless of the point. That's not even the point. That's a side thing. Who cares? The trade talks are heating up. More teams are interested. Deshaun Watson has a no-trade clause. Like, it's been reported that he has no interest in Philadelphia. You look at the odds out right now on Deshaun Watson's next team. Miami Dolphins still the betting favorite. They're minus 150, in fact, to land Deshaun Watson. Carolina 3-1, Philly and Pittsburgh and Denver each at 5-1. Saints actually 12-1. To me, it's a two-team race. I think teams are calling. Philly's probably calling. Pittsburgh probably calling. Denver was interested in the offseason. Why wouldn't they be now? To me, it's Miami or Carolina.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Carolina only because Sam Darnold, as good as he looked early on, has looked just absolutely atrocious. So much so, I mean, he got benched, he got sat down, and that means no matter what Matt Rhule has said in the past, that he realizes as the guy in charge and sitting at the top of the mountain in Carolina, something's going to have to be done. And so that's going to have to be put in the mix. The thing that's funny to me is, again, because I still hold true to what I've said all along with all this, which is why would any general manager make this move, especially right now, because there's still so much uncertainty, unless, as we were talking about in Lance Zierlein from the bench and others had brought to the table last week, that there were reports from people in the know that they were making significant progress on putting to rest a majority of the 22, if not all of the 22 cases, and that they wouldn't be a factor in any kind of deal being made. Now, if that's true, then everyone should be on the table, and then everybody should be interested. And then if you're Nick Caserio, you're right back where you wanted to be before all the 22 cases surfaced, and that is multiple people involved pushing the price as high as it will go to get us as many potential assets as we possibly can. And if that's the case, let's talk. The other thing that needs to be, as much as Carolina crapped the bed, Dell, it's your team. But on the flip side, once again, Tua looked damn good. And so I don't understand why the Texans wouldn't be uninterested, and I don't understand why the Dolphins would be so quick to move him out.
I've pointed it out a couple times. We saw last year Deshaun with an awful defense. He won four games. The Dolphins' defense has regressed to a point where if they were even half of what they were last year, they'd probably be 4-3, 5-2. And as you mentioned, I don't know what it is about Tua for people that, as a young quarterback, you look at his mistakes and act like, well, that just proves he's not any good. How about the fact that when he threw those picks, and some people looking at the film would say his receivers hung him out to dry, he goes and throws two touchdown passes in the fourth quarter. And when the last time he touched a football, his team was up by a point, yep. And this bad Dolphins defense gave it right back up. He's a young quarterback. He's going to make mistakes. He overcame them, and he had the lead. I don't understand any of it, really. It's not for a person who deems himself somewhat logical. I don't get what the Dolphins would be doing by making the trade.
He had four touchdowns yesterday.
Over 108 passer rating. He was really
good. Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Probably injury proneness, I think, is the bigger concern than actual production on the field.
And Deshaun has torn up a knee and had ribs issues. He played through it, but he had to take a van to a game because he was beat up so
bad. And he
was
willing to do it, but that's the Dolphins side of things. From a Texans perspective, Jeremy, the issue I have is why have you said or reports saying that Texans are not interested in this guy? He's definitely better than your boy Davis Mills.
No doubt.
He definitely
that.
Has a higher ceiling with more potential. Why wouldn't you, whether you want him just to be your bridge quarterback or something else, why wouldn't you be interested in this guy if that's true?
I've liked what you said, too, just about the competition. Like, even if you just have him as a sweetener to this trade, doesn't necessarily mean you don't try to avoid getting a franchise quarterback at some point. Then you have the competition, see where you are. And there's always a demand for quarterbacks, too. So having a solid young quarterback on your roster, and you could always flip him for a trade later. I don't like the stubbornness either of the Houston Texans when it comes to Tua. I like Tua as a quarterback. I think at some point he's going to be a top 15 quarterback in the NFL. I think he's pretty close to that right now, too. I don't know if he's ever going to be that franchise quarterback where he's winning MVPs, leading teams to Super Bowls, but you can do far worse than Tua. I like what I saw from him yesterday, especially in the fourth quarter, down big, and led his team to a comeback, like Dell said, and had the lead late in the game. 713-780-ESPN. What do you want, Houston, from this Deshaun Watson trade? What's the bare minimum that you need in return? Because, look, if you're making this trade before next Tuesday's NFL trade deadline, the minimum that I need to have is 3 first-round draft picks. If I'm not getting that met, waiting to the offseason. Houston, what do you think? 713-780-3776.
And we said that last week, right? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you're not in a position of strength by any means, but you're definitely not having a closeout sale with coupons all over the place. You either get a deal that makes sense for you or you hold off. There's nothing that's lighting a fire under your ass saying you got to do this.
Yep. 713-780-3776. Your reactions, and also, when we return, who are the Braves? Let's learn about this Astros World Series opponent next. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at New Brakes. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. And look, the more and more listeners that go to New Brakes to get their brakes done, give me the feedback that, God, it was simple. It was easy. It was painless. And it wasn't expensive. It wasn't like overpriced as opposed to the other brake shops in town. That's exactly the concept. That's why they're having so much success and so many people going to them that they're hiring more technicians so they can get more brake jobs done to make sure that they can handle all the people coming their way. Go to nubrakes.com right now. Mention ESPN 97.5, save 10%, but book that appointment. They'll come to you to do what they do. It's the same way, instead of shopping for an hour in the grocery store, you get your groceries curbside or you have them delivered to the house. Because time is money, and saving it makes sense. And that's exactly why you do it with New Brakes, because New Brakes has competitive rates with any brake shop in town. They use certified technicians that only do brakes, so they're not going to upsell you. And they're going to come to you to do what they do, no matter where it might be. If it's at work, like Aggie Matt, while he's doing in meetings and doing things in his office, they're in his parking garage fixing his brakes. They did it for me while I was doing a show. They came to the parking garage in less than 40 minutes. They were completely done. They did a fantastic job. It was painless. It was easy. And it was affordable. That's what I like. All the different things that make it make sense for me will make sense for you, too. And that's why you should go to New Breaks. Mention ESPN 97.5. Save 10%. Go to NUBreaks.com. That's NewBreaks.com.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting InnovationMap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.
Kane is in the building.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We have a lot of work to do. This is a very, very good Atlanta Braves team. They have a very balanced lineup. They have a very good starting pitching staff. We're familiar with Charlie Morton, but some of these other guys we haven't really seen. And if you watch how they played over the last couple months and how they played against the Dodgers, we've got a lot of work to do and we've got a lot of homework in front of us.
That was James Click talking to the media ahead of the World Series, which begins tomorrow night. You can listen to it right here, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We are home for the Astros throughout the World Series, the ESPN call with Dan Shulman. The Braves, look, this team's hot. 44-22 since they made all those trades on July 30th. Best record in baseball since that point. Look who they beat, too, the Brewers, who had one of the best seasons in the NL. They beat them in four games in the NLDS, and they beat up on the Dodgers in six games in the NLCS. So you have a team that's talented, didn't get off to a great start, but finished as strong as anybody since July 30th, and a red-hot team. It gives you those feels a little bit of the Nationals in 19. The NL East team that didn't start well, finished hot, and it hot in the postseason, hot at the right time.
Well, and as much as we give James Click credit for at least trying to resurrect the bullpen with the savvy moves that he made leading up to the deadline and not going over the luxury tax, you have to give the Braves all the credit in the world, because once they lost Ronald Acuna Jr., everybody thought the season was over and it was just going to be a wash. But in comes Jock Peterson, and in comes Rosario, and in comes the guys that they added. And you know what they did? They stepped it up and picked it up to a different level. And now you always have to be aware of the hot team. Sure, Vegas has the Astros as the favorites in this series. Sure, everybody's talking like, hey, it's not the Dodgers, as if it's going to be an easier run for the Astros. But as hot as the Astros are, dare I say the Braves have been hotter because of, like you said, Jeremy, the teams they had to beat, the way they had to go about their business, the fact that the Dodgers, and living the deja vu of the fact that they did this last year, were up 3-1 against the Dodgers and then watched it all melt away and wither away until that they were sent home packing and the Dodgers would go on to win the World Series. It looked like that could happen again. When Taylor hit the three bombs and they put it to him in the last game in L.A., it looked like, oh, God, now their pitching's lined up with Scherzer and then Buehler. They're going to have a chance to do it again. But you know what? The Braves persevered. They didn't care if it was Walker Buehler moved up because Scherzer
was
moved out.
Which was stupid, by the way.
I think so, too.
I hated that decision by the Dodgers.
I completely agree. On 3 days rest, I don't think that was the right call because their bats had been hot. So you need someone that's going to have the freshest arm, to have the sharp location, the best velocity. I don't think you got the best Walker Buehler, and I think that's just another reason why that there's all this heat for the Dodgers to find a new manager, and it's been going on for years. If not for the World Series last year, Dave Roberts would be looking for work, in my opinion, and I think that he may be looking for work before the start of next season. The only thing that may save him is injuries. But on the flip side, you cannot take away from what Snitker has done as a manager, from what the organization has done with the moves that they made, and the fact, like you said, there's not a team hotter. The Astros may be as hot as the Braves offensively, but there's not a team hotter in baseball in the way that the Braves are hitting it, and the way, you know, a guy like Rosario, of all people, has picked it up after coming off of injury where they had to wait to get him, and he's been absolutely lighting it up. So has Jock Peterson, my least favorite player in baseball, but you got to give him his credit.
Four trades they made in July: Jock Peterson, Jorge Soler, Adam Duvall, who's their starting center fielder, and Eddie Rosario, who was the NLCS MVP, and didn't trade much for those guys also. And you look back at the trade deadline, and the two teams that are playing in the World Series, they didn't make the splash moves, right? Like Max Scherzer, Trey Turner, those were the splashes in July. The Astros traded for Kendall Graveman, good move, but you know he's cheap, going to be a free agent at the end of the year, didn't give up a ton. Traded for Yimi Garcia. They traded their everyday center fielder for Phil Maton and a catching prospect, and Phil Maton got a pretty big out in Game 6 of the ALCS. So you have two teams here that kind of made shrewd moves in July, not those splash moves in July, and here they are in the World Series. You mentioned Snitker, their manager, Brian Snitker. If you haven't heard now, you're going to hear it to nauseam throughout this series. Brian Snitker, the father of Troy Snitker, who is the Astros hitting coach. So you have a connection there between the Snitkers. That is going to be something you hear a whole lot about, which is a cool story as well. A lot of history between these two teams. When you go back to the playoffs, they've met a ton in the National League. They've since 1997, they've met five times in the NLDS. The Braves had won the first three. That was the Maddox, Glavine, Smoltz Braves. The Astros did win the last two, though. But these two teams, they have some history. Not that it's going to affect the World Series at all, but it is a former rival of the Houston Astros.
What do you hear more about? Siri jokes in the World Series, or are we done with those? Because we don't have to worry about how old Soto is. So we moved on with Joe Buck to the Siri jokes.
Yeah, I think it's
now we're going to go on to the family affair with the Snitkers.
What was the Siri joke? I missed that.
Oh, my God. You didn't hear Joe Buck constantly over and over go, yeah. And then even John Smoltz jump in on it and go, well, if you have a question in terms of when's the last time that happened, wouldn't you ask the Astros center fielder right now? And everybody was doing the Hey Series, and Joe wouldn't let it die. But you know what? It's a neat story. I think it's as much as everybody's like, well, it's not, the ratings are going to suck and baseball hates this. It's a bad matchup. You know what? We know who had the best records in the regular season, led by the San Francisco Giants and then the Dodgers. We get all that. But you got the two hottest teams in baseball facing in the final series of the year. That's all you can really ask for. You want good baseball. You want excitement. You want the teams playing at their best with a chance to win it all. And they've been good teams all season long. And I keep saying this, and we keep going back to this. But for whether you embrace the hate or not, whether you're sick and tired of talking about the cheating or not, in my opinion, it's not good enough for the Astros to just have gotten there again. The way they completely shut the door on everything else and get people to finally give them their due for being a bunch of talented baseball players is to finish this deal, to win it all. And I've said it throughout the season before the playoffs even started. I was harping on this all year long, and I still stand by it. They have to win it. They have to finish this deal. And not pull with the Nationals. I don't care if you go to Game 7 and you blame the manager for a bad move. That's not going to get it done. But people more and more are coming around a little bit. They might not ever want to like the Astros, but they have to give them credit. Because even the analysts, the only guy that's not is Jeff Passan. And I mean, even in saying that they got there, I forget if he mentioned it like 22 or 23 times, the cheating, in an article where he was trying to give credit to the Astros.
He did. I mean, the article, he gave credit to the Astros in the article. He does throw shade, and he throws some subtle hints about the fact that they were very much involved in the cheating scandal. But he also says things like they didn't need to do it, like Bonds and A-Rod didn't need to do it.
But now you've got the guys on every network coming around too, going, hey, and now you've got players doing it as well. When you talk about the Josh Donaldsons and the Bassetts and all these guys coming around, this is the final straw to get them over the top and finally put it behind them. They
probably
got
from
if
like
they
a,
win it all.
Probably from a national perspective. Yeah. To me, you have people in the city that know who they are.
Oh, locally, it's not. No, locally, right. That's never been an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, this is their team. It's a baseball city now, and everybody loves this team, and they know how talented they are regardless of what happened in 17, and they never wavered in that. This is like you said, the national honks and all the people that have harped over and over again on the cheating. This is the way you put them to bed.
Sure. To me, you want the Astros to win, certainly, but it's not going to change my opinion of how I think this Houston Astros team has performed during this five-year
ride. Houstonians know, and people that follow them on a daily basis. But I think the national types, this is the pacifier that they all need.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. 713-780-ESPN. Houston, how you feeling ahead of this Astros-Braves World Series? Begins tomorrow night right here on ESPN 97.5. 713-780-3776. The odds were released once the series was known. The Astros started off at -140 favorites, Braves +120. The current odds, the Astros dipped a little bit, not much though, -135. The Braves up to +115, so not a whole lot of movement there. But the Astros currently the favorites of the 2021 World Series, as they were in 2019 when they lost to the Nationals in seven games. We do know Framber Valdez will be on the mound for the Houston Astros in Game 1. Charlie Morton will be on the mound Game 2. Dusty Baker, meeting with the media right now, he says he knows who's going to start Game 2, but he's not ready to announce who's going to start Game 2 for the Astros. I saw some videos of them working out and Luis Garcia was bunting.
Bunting, I saw it too.
Now, I sent out a tweet saying, interesting Luis Garcia's bunting whenever you would think he would start in Game 2 and Game 6, both of those in American League ballparks. You don't need him to be practicing bunting or taking any sort of BP. I also think, though, that it's probably just some basic generic, hey, starters, go out there and take a round of BP. You throw in some bunts there. So don't think you can read too much into it. It would be normal rest, though, for Luis Garcia if he started tomorrow. Fromber's actually getting an extra day's rest, just the way the schedule breaks out. But Fromber or Luis Garcia would be on normal rest for Game 2 on Wednesday.
Yeah, Luis Garcia's pitching here. Look, I think all pitchers have to be prepared to bunt, because if the situation, you know, goes up with a long series, they're going to have a chance or two where they might have to take an at-bat. And you know, all hands are on deck. You know, you look at guys like Freed for the Braves. He's a good hitter. So he's been used even as a pinch hitter in the series. You go to the National League Park, there's a chance that you're going to be needed or called upon, so everybody's at least got to be familiar with it. If your number's called, it's better to be prepared than tell some guy out of the blue, hey, go grab a bat and lay one down, and then watch them pop it up if they made contact at all. So I get it. It was Randy McAvoy that I saw on the early news, Lisa's news at 11, where he was live from Minute Maid Park.
Oh, really?
And Garcia was in the cage, and I'm going, wait a minute, why is he back there? Yeah. And then Randy said he's taking BP to practice bunting. I'm going, okay, I can see how.
See, I don't want to have hot takes about this because, again, it's just a round of BP. Yeah. But if you know he's starting Game 2 and 6, like if you've already made that decision, right, and you're probably not already making who's starting Game 6, but if you just went with a normal rotation, he starts Game 2, he starts Game 6, not so sure I love the idea that he's taking batting practice at Minute Maid today. But, hey, that's what's going on over there at Minute Maid. For the Astros Braves World Series starting on Tuesday. 713-780-3776. When we return, we're going to talk to Mark Lane of Yahoo Sports, writes for Texans Wire, and talk about the debacle that was Arizona. And we'll get into some Deshaun rumors as well with Mark. We do that when we return. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HR&P guest line. Joining us on the HR&P guest line, Mark Lane, who writes for Texans Wire, Yahoo Sports. And Mark, we had to live through another debacle yesterday. If you're a Texans fan, falling to the Cardinals in a big way. Just three offensive points. They've not scored a touchdown on 27 straight offensive series. How should Texans fans be watching their Texans football every single Sunday?
Geez. Definitely after taking some beta blockers, that's for sure. That's the thing is, when the offense gets the ball, particularly in these road games, they're not opening it up vertically for Davis Mills to at least drive the ball down the field. I mean, even if it results in an interception or anything. The run game is so non-existent that they can't even get anything going. Honestly, you should watch the offense hoping that they get a first down. And then go from there. The defense has a little more optimism than the offense at this point, but I don't think that the complexion of the offense is going to change until Tyrod Taylor gets back there, because with his experience from playing with Buffalo and having led a team to the playoffs and being a former Pro Bowler himself, he sees a little bit more of the game than Mills does. And with his legs, he can pick up some easier yards and, you know, challenge the defense a little bit. But until Tyrod Taylor gets back in, I just don't see this offense as being anything other than expansion team level.
And, Mark, there's so much to unwrap there just because of the fact that I don't think they should even go back to Tyrod Taylor, simply because of the fact that I think this secretly or not so secretly is what Caserio wants anyway. But before we get into all that, I mean, the issue that I had was early in the season, I kept saying, hey, regardless of what you think of David Culley, and basically he was a complete unknown because he'd never been a head coach before, even a coordinator, I thought that they had constructed a better coaching staff. I thought with Campen and Lovey and some of the guys that they put together on both sides of the football, and even Tim Kelly without Bill O'Brien breathing on him, even in the preseason, it looked like they were more structured. They had more discipline. The penalties, all the things that I said look like a very positive sign for this team when we were searching for positives. Now I'm looking at yesterday's game going, it's all out the window. Like, they don't have any discipline. They can't stop getting penalties. It's like every single time you turn around, you're like, they are self-inflicting as much as they're doing anything else, and it's painful. That's why it's hard to watch.
It is, because anytime there's a run play, you just know that there's going to be a penalty. Anytime Davis Mills gets outside the pocket after evading pressure and rolls out, you know there's going to be a penalty. And you hear Brandon Cook said last week that in order to be disciplined, players have got to want to be disciplined themselves. You hear David Culley talking about how unacceptable the penalties are and everything, but it just seems, you know, sort of like how people bemoan credit card debt, you know. Oh, I can't believe this credit card debt that my spouse has inflicted on the household, but, you know, we're just going to get through it. Well, have you done anything about it? No. We're just going to hope that the debt just kind of takes care of itself.
Well,
and that's what it's like. You just don't see, I mean, you hear the words, but you don't see the results on the field. I mean, even let's say against the Rams, for example, they go out and the running game's going and no one holds. Then you can say, well, they're working on their penalties. And then you have what happened to Malik Collins, so then you get just sort of some bad calls mixed in with the penalties, but it's largely really due to whatever's not happening at practice.
Well, Mark, before I let my partner get in on that bad call stuff, I want to just get into one more thing, because this is something they did control that bothers me, is a couple years ago, we couldn't stop talking about how putrid the offensive line was, how pathetic it was. It was one of the worst offensive lines in football. And then they spent the resources. They made the trade to get Tunsil. They used first and second round picks to build the rest of the line. They kept adding to it. And now all of a sudden, it's like, even if you wanted a running game or you wanted to protect Davis Mills, there's a reason why he's getting out of his hand in 1.5 seconds, because if he doesn't, he's going to get crushed.
Yes, and at this particular juncture, you do have Charlie Heck at right tackle, and you've got Jaron Christensen at left tackle. And then they made the move to McCray in the middle of the game, but he started at center last week. Some of it is a little bit of continuity in terms of availability issues, but nevertheless, that was a presumptive strength going into the season. Even far back in the off season, May and June, when Houston was at the bottom of the power rankings, people looked at the run blocking as, hey, maybe this is an aspect that could work for the team, and it just hasn't manifested. And when it does, it's pockmarked with penalties. And so there's just, I mean, I'm not being dramatic at all. There aren't any positives on offense right now.
Mark Lane covers the Texans, Texans Wire, Yahoo Sports, joining us on the HR&P guest line. And perhaps the positive you can look forward to if you're this organization is a potential Deshaun Watson trade. You can start to look forward to the future a little bit more with what you hope is a stockpile of draft picks that you could get for Deshaun Watson. Joel and I have been pretty much on the same idea. Doesn't make a ton of sense to trade him before the offseason, before the November 2nd deadline, unless you get what you want. To me, the bare minimum is 3 first-round draft picks to whoever you're trading him to. What is your bare minimum on what you need to get in return for Deshaun Watson if it's before November 2nd?
It's got to be kind of like the Ricky Williams trade or the Herschel Walker trade. It's got to be franchise. I mean, you've got to build the ammunition. You've got to go out and acquire the building materials. So definitely you've got to start talking with a team that can give you 3 first-rounders. I think the 2 second-rounders is pretty good as well. Just try to acquire as many draft picks in the top 100 over the next 2 to 3 drafts. And I think that's where you start talking when it comes to Watson. And I think that Nick Caserio should be commended for continuing to drive a hard bargain, because we know that in this with this franchise recently. There have been general managers who will just trade faces of the franchise, you know, for peanuts. So in that regard, Caserio should be commended for continuing to ask for the building materials so he can turn around the Texans. And that is what has been impressive at this point, is he hasn't really been budged by deadlines, so to speak. Caserio has been looking for the right move. But again, in acquiring all these draft picks and everything and executing these trades, you better make sure that your scouting department and your player personnel department know how to utilize these picks. Because, again, going back to the Ricky Williams trade in 1999, when Mike Ditka gave up all those picks to Washington to acquire Ricky Williams, what did Washington do with it? They didn't even win an NFC East title. They fired North Turner in the middle of that upcoming. Actually, they did in 99, but it should have been the basis for them taking over the NFC, and they did bupkis with it. So if Houston gets all of these picks for Watson, you better hope that they know how to scout and acquire the right players.
Mark, you talk to people. You're covering this team on a daily basis. We said, like, what general manager in their right mind is making this move unless a majority of these cases are put to rest? Now we're hearing that there was a possibility of that. This is why the trade talks have heated up again. Are you hearing those kind of things? Are you hearing anything on the front of, hey, the majority of these cases are going to be put to rest so that teams would be more interested in acquiring a quarterback like Deshaun Watson?
I haven't heard anything like that. So far as I know, his deposition is still slated for around the Super Bowl. But I haven't heard anything like that yet.
Well, then that's why I would say it's much ado about nothing, because unless there's some intel that we're not getting, that general managers know about and talking to league personnel, there's no reason why any general manager in this league should feel like they should be out there pursuing Deshaun Watson, knowing it's their butt on the line and they're giving up a ton of future assets for a guy that might not play with them for a while.
Yes, and that is kind of like the surprise for whoever acquires Watson, is how this unfortunate situation resolves itself. But one of the reasons why he has not been placed on the commissioner exempt list is because in the personal conduct policy, you get placed on the commissioner exempt list if you are charged with a felony, or I believe if you're charged with a violent crime. And so all of this has just been in civil cases and complaints with the Houston Police Department. So in the court of public opinion, I mean, understandably, it looks bad, but according to the NFL's own rules, that's why he hasn't been put. An explanation for why he hasn't been put on the commissioner's exempt list.
Mark, great stuff as always, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
All right, last time Houston and were 1-6, and the Astros were in the World Series, 2005. All right, talk to you later, guys.
Appreciate the insight, Mark Lane. They didn't win the 2005 World Series.
I was just going to say, they didn't win the series that year.
I thought you were going to say it was 2017, then Mark drops with the 2005. That's why we keep Mark around, keep us in check, and he brings all of the tidbits there. Mark Lane, Yahoo Sports, Texans Wire. You can follow him on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane. The Real Mark Lane.
Don't get that mixed up with the fake Mark Lane.
When we come back, and get these in, 713-780-ESPN, our weekend MVPs. We'll give you ours. We want to know who yours are as well. 713-780-3776. We do it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Right now, I want to tell you about the good people at MyBookie. If you're looking for a place to put a wager on the Saints-Seahawks game tonight, if you want to get in on some NBA action, you want to get a head start like Jeremy was doing before the show on some college football games or pro games coming up for the weekend, there's only one place to put your money down. It's mybookie.ag. Go to mybookie.ag right now and see why. Because right now they're running a promotion where your next deposit up to $1,000, they're going to double it. So you got more money in your account, more games to bet on, more chances to win. Who does that? They do. You know why? They love their customers. They want to take care of you. All you got to do is put in the promo code BET975. Go to mybookie.ag, sign up, put the deposit in, put the promo code in, BET975, and immediately when you look at your account, you're going to see double what you put in, sitting there waiting to be placed on games. It's a phenomenal way they take care of their customers. It's for existing customers, previous customers, and new customers. And on top of that, they're going to have live in-game betting. You can bet anywhere from your laptop to your cell phone to your tablet to all the different reasons why, like promos where they do eliminator pools. They do certain different promotions that cost you nothing to get involved in. But if you win, you get cash out. And when you want your money, they're going to pay you. And while your money's in your account, it's safe. It's why you go there instead of any place else, because all the risk is taken out of it in terms of security things and issues that you experience with other sites. Been there, done that, don't need to do it anymore. Go to mybookie.ag, put in the promo code BET975, reap the benefits of double your next deposit, and then let the games begin. Bet your money down. When you win, you're going to get paid, and there's only one place to play. It's always MyBookie.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get to your weekend MVPs in 5 minutes. 713-780-ESPN. Who were your weekend MVPs? 713-780-3776. First, though, the Rockets played some basketball yesterday.
Oh, boy.
Really good start time, to be honest with you, in terms of how I was able to stack my football watching around it. Saw a good chunk of the game. Rockets played pretty well in the first half, I thought, considering the opponent. Celtics expected to be a playoff team in the East. 107-97 the final score. Rockets got outscored 36-21 in the third quarter and really put the game away. Positive for me, Jalen Green, 8 of 10 from 3. I mean, you want him shooting at a high clip. 8 of 10 is not sustainable, but you want him to be a solid three-point shooter. That's how he's going to be a good player in the NBA. Negative for me, Kevin Porter Jr., 8 turnovers in the game. He has 19 turnovers in his first 3 games of the season.
Yeah, I think it's just a microcosm of what some of the callers were calling in talking about that watch the game is the fact that there just doesn't seem to be any discipline. There doesn't seem to be any coaching staff working with him, pulling him aside and going, hey, next time do this, don't do that, look for this. It just doesn't seem that there's any kind of structure. We know it's a young team. We know it's a bunch of kids. But just like kids need a teacher so that they can achieve things and get to their fullest potential.
Is that what a teacher does?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's what a coach does too. And I don't know what kind of coaching they're getting right now, because I'm looking at this team and I'm going, what we were talking about from the time they, even before they went to training camp, I said, look, this is the other reason why, when even the caller noticed it, John Wall's sitting there yucking it up with the guy. That's why I want John Wall to stay away from this team. Because you know what? He's going to have a negative impact, not a positive impact. He's not working on Kevin Porter Jr.'s handles. Right. Trying to teach him what he's already learned in the league. He's yucking it up with him. And it's like a slapstick comedy tour on the sidelines instead of guys that are focused on trying to win a game that might make people take notice of a team that shouldn't have any business beating a Boston Celtics team that was beatable last night. And Jaylen Brown wasn't playing. So there were opportunities for you to make a statement instead of making a statement against the worst team in the league. So, yay, you're not going to go winless on the season, and you did what everybody's going to do. They're going to thump the crap out of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Make a statement against a team that actually has some higher aspirations that could make people go, wow, they're young, they're talented, and they might be on the move quicker than we think. Right now, I'm seeing a whole lot of disjointedness, and it starts with Kevin Porter Jr. The turnovers were ridiculous. And you know what, Jeremy? It's one thing to say, hey, you know what? They were running a play, And either, someone ended up dismantling the play by pushing physically or creating something and the ball got away. No, these are just careless. Throw it where you thought a guy was that wasn't.
Or Harden turnovers.
Yeah, throw an alley-oop to a guy that wasn't jumping and watch it bounce out of bounds. They were just sloppy, really frustrating turnovers, which is why I said I couldn't watch, even if I wanted to, I couldn't watch the whole game because it wasn't good basketball.
Now, it's too early to call for Silas's job. You're on the same page with that as well. But you start to look at trends. You start to wonder. It's fair to ask the question, you know, is he the guy to lead the development of this team? Let's see where they are in a couple of months. Let's see if the things that are a problem now aren't a problem in a couple months. And then you realize that Silas is doing his job. One of the questions that I have, too, is, like, if Kevin Porter Jr. is going to be this careless and reckless with the basketball, he's not a point guard. And I know they're kind of trying to fit that right now to see if he can be that guy. You're turning the ball over a ton in the NBA, you're not a point guard. It's just that simple for me. And again, like Silas, too early to call, but it's something I'll be looking on for the rest of the season and the upcoming games. They play at Dallas tomorrow.
And the other thing that I'm concerned about, Jeremy, is because you do have a tradable asset on your roster, Eric Gordon needs to get more minutes simply because you got to showcase him. Because otherwise, with the amount of minutes he's playing, people are going to go, what's wrong with Eric Gordon? Is there something that we're missing? Has he slipped? Has he fallen off? Because now I don't know that he's worth that money, and I don't know that my veteran team that needs a shooter wants him. So you got to showcase him more, and he's not getting the minutes right now. The quicker he gets minutes and he shows he can still play, the quicker you find a home for him, you get more assets in your back pocket, and now you can really play the kids.
Couldn't agree more. He needs to be some of your showcasing so you can trade him. 713-780-3776. Who are your weekend MVPs? 713-780-ESPN. Mine was this guy.
3-2. Runner is going. Swing and a miss. Throw down the tag. They got him. They got him at second. A strike him out, throw him out, inning ending, double play. And the Red Sox do not score.
Martin Maldonado, the machete, he's my weekend MVP. Joel, who you got?
Well, it wasn't Charlie's because Charlie wanted to see Jason Castro. I think that...
A little cheap shot there on the way to your MVP.
That's the way Chucky goes about his business sometimes. He was adamant. Mine is Luis Garcia, because we went into that game, and he was the second straight Astros pitcher that we were sitting there hoping, best case scenario was five innings, a couple of runs given up to keep you in the ball game. Instead, he kept the Red Sox at bay the entire time. What he was able to do was so completely unexpected, but so deeply needed by this ball club. He was the difference maker for you playing a game seven and throwing everything up in the air and hoping it comes out your way, to putting the Red Sox to bed and getting a whole weekend of rest while you watched it play out on the other side, going, we're in a really good position right now with our pitching staff and our two starters, which we didn't think we were ever going to say the rest of the season.
Yeah, he was awesome. Dell, who was your weekend MVP?
My MVP is the tens of people who decide to stay and watch Houston play East Carolina. I mean,
tens, he says.
Credit to those people who hung around after a multi-hour rain delay and then had to sit through an overtime period as well. Credit to them. So MVP to Jan, Mark, David, because I can name them all.
Karen, got to be a Karen in there.
Well, Jeremy was there.
Well, you worked. You don't get an MVP for getting paid to stay. I mean, I'm sure Marcus was out there. Thomas. I mean, all 15 of you who decided to hang out, you're the MVP. You watch your team play. Credit to them.
That's a good one, Dell. I appreciate you saying that. Big one on Saturday. Undefeated SMU coming into TDEC Stadium.
Okay, if you take the locals out of it.
Undefeated American Conference Houston Cougars.
He's still talking. Take the locals out of it. Who's your MVP?
Who?
Take the local teams out of it.
Take the local teams out of it.
I got mine. Out of it. Joe Burrow.
Yeah, you got Jamar Chase.
Yeah,
too.
If you're gonna stick with that game, maybe Jamar Chase.
Mm. Well, it's not local, and it's a guy that a lot of people thought was, going to be for injury and otherwise.
You know what? I'm gonna go with that Illinois roster who had to take all that slander from their head coach.
No kidding.
And then go upset a top 10 team on the road.
That's a good one too.
D-bag of a head coach.
Yeah. Hey, you guys aren't any good. This isn't my fault. Oh yeah. Okay. We'll see.
What an idiot. Yeah. Mine's Shane Bowen, Titans defensive coordinator. Keeping the Kansas City Chiefs without a touchdown.
Just now, did he do that, points. Or was that self-inflicted?
Probably a little bit of both.
Because Pat Mahomes tried to do it all himself, and he didn't do a whole lot.
713-780-3776. Go out to the HRMP listener line. Get one of these calls in. Steve, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. Who's your MVP?
It's got to be Derek Carr and everything, the way Coach Bisacci and everything, the way they turn this team around. This team is so much better with John Gruden being gone. He was too darn conservative.
All right, appreciate the call, Steve. There's a Raider fan. Just win, baby. And the Raiders are just winning, baby.
Gruden could be called a lot of things right now. Conservative is not one of the ones that I'd be going to first.
Play calling.
But, with all things considered, I think the bigger thing for Derek Carr is, amongst all that turmoil, your head coach completely changed in the middle of a season when you're playing well. And let's not look, for as much as Gruden liked to play musical quarterbacks, he all of a sudden, out of the blue, became completely infatuated with Derek Carr and maybe turned his career around.
Yeah.
But for them to, the entire team, to play through that mess and to play as well as they're playing, I think that was a great suggestion.
David Carr's brother is playing really well. He's getting some MVP love there with the Raiders as well. The text line saying Luis Garcia's MVP, not Joe Buck as MVP. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Surprised Noah Yordan Alvarez talk there.
Well,
ALCS MVP.
Look, but he's been a stick the entire playoff, so it's not something that's just all of a sudden, you know, came in to save the day for them, though he did. I think everybody basically had low expectations for the pitching staff. They were exhausted as it was. The two guys that performed the best the start before probably was their worst start of the year. So it was easy for me to pick Garcia, and you could have picked Fromber before that.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Don't want to do it, but this Texans offense is anemic. Really bad. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Get low when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5.